Back in the 80s, we knew how to treat kids, terrify them, and prepare them for the inevitability of death. And no children's film created more depressed millennial adults than The Land Before Time, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two zygotes. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's funny because everyone was once a sperm, but when I was about to say I'm here with two sperms, that didn't feel right.
Right.
Because yins are ladies. It's weird that sperms become ladies.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't feel comfortable trying to dissect that.
I'm not,
my scientific, my science level is not nearly as high as my pop culture knowledge. So,
that non-scientist is Camila Adams. Apparently just overwhelmed by the conversation is Robin Hitchcock.
Hi, that's me. Completely overwhelmed.
If you're coming in now, we talked about Look Who's Talking last week. It starts with sperms and eggs in remarkable, juicy detail. So,
I mean, listen, I had really literally never considered that at one point I was a sperm.
Me either.
It feels like sperms are boys.
Yes.
Right.
Like dogs.
Right. Yes, all dogs are boys.
Eggs are cats or girls.
Right.
Right. Never thought of this before I started saying this intro, so it's the best thing to come out of Look Who's Talking, which we managed to settle on 44 and a third was our final score. That is 81st place overall. People of the past, I guess there just wasn't that much to see in the theaters, because that's the fourth biggest movie of the year. 81st place, just below Police Academy, just above Underworld Evolution. Now that feels about right.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Look Who's Talking was John Travolta's comeback after the bomb that was Staying Alive, which we've also covered. And we did like it more. Staying Alive, we gave 31 and two-thirds, 98th place overall. I'm glad none of the sequels to that movie were the number one movies in America.
Oh, thank God.
Because I never have to watch them. But here we are. Oh, my God. The Land Before Time. It exists as a source of wistful trauma in the minds of a whole generation. Camila, I'll ask you first, because you would have been out of the target range when this hit theaters.
Yeah, I did not see. I've never seen this movie before. I was like probably I was junior high when this came out.
So, yeah.
That wasn't my bag. And I don't think my sister, who's 5 years younger than me, she wasn't interested in dinosaurs or anything like that. So yeah, I'm glad you talked at the top, mentioned the trauma, because I'm like, we just didn't give a fuck about kids and their feelings back then, huh? Like this, I was watching like, what is happening?
I don't know that I saw this in the theater. We'll get to Robin in a second because she has more of an experience. I don't know that I saw this in the theater, but I'm sure I saw it. There are moments on VHS, you know, like there were moments that were burned into my brain. And I'm sitting there going, this explains some things. This explains like both like fears, yes, but also like a general melancholy. Like it was a dark time for entertaining children.
Apparently, yeah. And I mean, it just kind of also made me think of American Tale. Like I did see that in the theater. And I also remember like the fucking tears on that one too, but at least there were some jaunty numbers to go along with it.
Don Bluth wanted a mess before we get to that, and we'll circle back around to it. By the way, happy birthday, Camila.
Thanks. Happy belated to you.
Birthday.
Is it today? Are we right on it? Is it today?
No, it's Friday.
It's Friday.
Oh, okay. Happy birthday to both of you in this general time.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, if you stood me and Camila at the mall and asked the first 100 people who walked by, which one of these two is older? No one would get that right.
That is accurate.
Thank you.
Congratulations to you.
Appreciate
the grace for aging. Yeah. No, to Robin's point, well, we'll get back to the music. Robin, you have deep personal history with this that you researched yesterday?
Okay, so I was watching this movie and I was like, this explains so much about me. Like everything in it, I'm like, this explains so much, this explains so much. And one of the things I was thinking about was like, oh, this movie is probably why I was so afraid to see Jurassic Park.
Huh.
And then I was like, oh, well, this and Fantasia. So yeah. I was like, wait, when did they re-release Fantasia? When did I see The Rite of Spring after or before Land of Time? It's after. I saw it in the 1990 re-release. So then I start looking up all the Disney re-release dates, because I have said before that my earliest movie theater memory is seeing the 1987 re-release of Cinderella, and specifically the moment where Gus is picking up corn and he has a really big pile of corn. I'm like, I remember being in the movie theater and being like, yay. But so I was thinking about that, and then I was like, so maybe Land Before Time was the first release movie that I saw, not re-release, right? Because I remember seeing Land Before Time in the theater, and we'll talk about it. But then I was like, well, let me look up the release dates of all the other movies I remember seeing as a kid. And two things. First of all, I think the first initial release movie that I saw was The Chipmunk's Great Adventure.
Oh, sure.
Which came out in May of 87, so before Cinderella. And then also, I think I remember seeing Lady and the Tramp, which was re-released in 1986. So I would have been 2.5.
Wow.
But I was walking down the street in East Reading this summer, and I was like, I saw, this used to be a movie theater, and I saw Lady and the Tramp in it. And then I got my hair cut and I turned and there was a barbershop. And I was like, so maybe I'm remembering that wrong. So if anybody lives in East Reading and you can confirm that place that is currently like a live theater used to be a movie theater, let me know. And I'll know for sure that I saw Lady and the Tramp there. No one who could confirm this for me is alive. Aww. And thank God that Littlefoot saying goodbye to his mother prepared me for that.
Did it really?
Do you feel that you learned a lesson on that day, or just wept?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Let's do some segments before we unpack learning about death.
Yeah. It's all me. It is also my recap. So, somebody tell me when to go.
Go!
It's the dinosaur times. Littlefoot, a baby long neck, is born. He tries to go play with Sarah, a three-horn, but their parents won't allow it because dinosaurs are racist. Littlefoot sneaks out in the middle of the damn night to chase a frog, leading to a T-Rex attack that gets his mother killed, a death that both Littlefoot and the audience watch in real time. Then, an earthquake. Littlefoot is separated from his surviving grandparents and gradually links up with Ducky, a big mouth, Petrie, a flyer, and Spike, a newborn spike tail. Sarah is also still around being a shithead because she's a shithead. Littlefoot remembers his mother's instructions about how to get to the Great Valley and leads the young dinosaurs there after surviving various peril. Even when we get to the happy ending, the music is still sad because the film knows you're depressed.
The ending's only kind of happy.
Right? There was no...
A lot of people are still dead.
There was no relief. There was no emotional relief in this movie.
They're like, we have temporarily escaped our certain doom.
Cool.
Yeah, how long are those grandparents going to make it? You know, those wrinkly, teeth-fallen-out grandparents don't have too many eons left to go.
I mean, there's, what, 14 movies?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, somebody had to hang around. And you know who it wasn't? Was the voice of Ducky. Robin, take it. Let's just get this out of the way.
Okay, yeah, a couple weeks ago, I was watching All Dogs Go to Heaven, another Don Bluth disturbing childhood masterpiece. And we were talking about how adorable the main voice actress is. Her name's Judith Barthy or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so we looked her up to see if she did anything else. And it's like, oh, she was Ducky in Land Before Time before she was horribly murdered.
Son of a bitch. No wonder. Like, I Googled it and it shows you like the cast pictures and whatnot. And like hers is the only one that's not an adult. And I was like, something terrible must have happened to her.
Yeah. Yeah. She got murdered by her father. And it's a really sad story. If you care to go look it up and be miserable, all out there on the Wikipedia. So
she has the Ducky yup 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 quote on her headstone.
No,
that's true.
Oh,
Rest in peace.
Yeah, is it too late to veto this movie?
Vetoing Land Before Time isn't going to protect you from death, Camila.
It's a show about death. Here are the facts. Land Before Time was released November 18th of 1988. It made $7.5 million that weekend. Second place was the second week of Child's Play, $5.2 million. A less disturbing movie.
Happier ending. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, no, it worked out. In fourth place, apparently no one knew not to counter-program things. Now everyone knows, put out one children's movie at a time. Fourth place was the debuting Oliver and Company from Disney, which came out with $4 million. So Land Before Time easily beat Disney in its first weekend, although not overall for the grosses of those films. Land Before Time was a one-week...
Sorry, they talk about that in Waking Sleeping Beauty, that really great documentary about the Disney Renaissance. They talk about how, mm-hmm. like, it was fucking, you know, the end of the world that they got hosed at the box office by Don Bluth, who was a Disney defector.
Oh.
Somehow it held better, because Oliver and Company made $53.2 million overall. Land Before Time made $48 million, so close, but it did hang around more. But yeah, that's a stark difference. Land Before Time only in first for the 1 week, although it did rise its second weekend to $8.1 million. That was not enough to defeat the debuting Scrooged, which came out in first place, $13 million. Another one we've covered. Land Before Time spent 7 weeks in the top 10. Like I said, $48 million, 20th place overall for 1988. The third highest grossing family film of the year, as long as we count Who Framed Roger Rabbit as a family film.
We should.
Yeah. Then Oliver and Company.
I feel barely. Much less traumatized by that film.
Seriously.
I don't know. Putting the shoe into the dip is one of the most haunting things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. So yes, confirmed. This is the shortest movie on our list. It
Woo!
Is the shortest number one movie in America, at least since 1982. It's probably not the shortest top grossing movie ever, but you'd have to go back at least to the 40s, if not earlier, to find something shorter than this that was the most popular movie on a given weekend. And easily, at 69 minutes, the shortest. Next is Nightmare Before Christmas is in second place, 76 minutes. The Rugrats movie was 79 minutes. And then there are five tied at 81 minutes. That is Toy Story. Beavis and Butthead Do America. Camila vetoed that at some point.
Yes.
Ice Age Phone Booth. The only live action on this roster, and Chicken Little. So why is it so short? Because the original cut was way more dark and disturbing.
No.
I'll repeat that. The original cut was more dark and disturbing. Don Bluth's original version had 10 minutes of additional footage, mostly of the T-Rex, but also just some clearly depicting the five main characters in continued peril.
Like what's more disturbing? Like his, like Littlefoot's mom just getting straight up decapitated and T-Rex wearing her head.
Yeah, that was one of the things that the killing Littlefoot's mom was much more violent than what you saw in the movie. And Spielberg told him it was too disturbing. He said, you're going to have kids crying in the lobby and parents demanding refunds.
I am certain there were kids crying anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, listen, kids cry at movies all the time.
And he did it only because it was Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. He did not want to. He has the uncut version at home, and he preserves it so that one day.
One day.
By the way, speaking of Spielberg, this is the only film with both Spielberg and George Lucas credited as producers that is not an Indiana Jones. Oh. So there you go. Hey, as Camila mentioned, there are a lot of these movies. The original was the only one released into theaters, but nevertheless is the first of 14 installments. Sequels starting in 1994 with The Great Valley Adventure, going all the way up to 2016's Journey of the Brave. Featuring the voices of Reba McEntire, Damon Wayans Jr., and Barry Bostwick. Wow. And finally, yes, that was Diana Ross at the end. Diana Ross's If We Hold On Together played over the end credits. Not a significant hit in the U.S., but it's four times platinum in Japan, where it became a karaoke staple.
I didn't stick around long enough for the credits, so I have no idea.
You were like, 68 minutes and I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Fuck this thing.
It was the saddest movie ever made before she died. Like, just the, like, the tone and the score are so, like, you expect it to be playing, you know, over your grandma's funeral. It's just got this hopeless, you know, the world is ending and they're running out of food and all of the dinosaurs hate all the other kind of dinosaurs and everything is just sadness and difficulty from the first frame.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally, it's a story about a civilization in decline. Like, it is like, okay, so y'all know that there used to be a completely different hierarchy of animals, and then most of them died, right? The thing about kids, how kids go through a dinosaur's phase, most kids do, I have always wanted to know more about how much of that is because dinosaurs and mass extinctions help us learn about death. And so to me, it makes perfect sense that this movie ultimately becomes Confront Your Parents' Mortality, the film.
Like, well, because
that's what dinosaurs are,
well,
really.
Can we at least confront your parents' mortality? Can you get potty trained first before? Like,
No!
See, that's the thing. I think that, you know, you should put some stakes in children's movies. And I've probably said that on that show before. The problem is, this is for toddlers. Like,
yes.
It's fairly artfully made, but this is not a family entertainment. It is a children's entertainment.
Absolutely.
It is targeted so young. And the disconnect between how tonally and textually devastating it is, and the fact that we're clearly watching something that is not going to be that amusing if you're more than four, is bizarre.
But four-year-olds sometimes have their parents die, Sean.
Yes, this is true. It just feels like a lot. And I know, like, this is, you know, real life happens, and it feels like a lot to put onto kids in a movie where they don't feel like kids are able to know the real names of these dinosaurs.
Yeah. Camila, they were named, but it's like, it's not like they went around being like, well, you know me, I'm an apatosaur, right?
Well, I'm long neck and sharp tooth, like, come on. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
what's Ducky's breed called?
I don't know. It's... No Flappy? I don't, what was that?
Yep. I'm a yep.
She was a duck thing. Was it just a duck bill,
or was it a sharp tail?
Big mouth. She was a big mouth.
Okay, I was thinking about this also. Are children's movies today as less disturbing as we think they are?
I think it's just more relief in them, more comic relief.
I see.
Like, you're letting off the pressure valve a little bit. This one, I felt there was nothing. There was nothing good was going down at all. Like, even when they were trying to have, like, their little, like, you know, walking through the meadows or whatever together, like, even, like, what was it, Littlefoot and the flying one were, like, arguing about, you know, tearing the star plant or whatever from his mom. And that was, so we're still, like, kind of depressed. Like, at least, like, you know, there's those scenes in Toy Story where, like, you're
right.
The toys are like, yeah, that shit is fucking. That's like, what, 10 minutes of it? And then the rest of the other hour and a half, we've got, like, just fun and entertainment and whatnot. And maybe also it could be, like, the animation style.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely not, like, it's not all cotton candy and bright colors or anything like that. This shit was, like, painted with, like, a mudded brush.
Right. Here's a bunch of muddy lizards.
Right.
Confronting mortality.
Right.
By the way, this is the epitome of, if you have a nice new TV, it looks worse. Like, this was.
Oh, my God. We watched it on Peacock, and,
there's
got to be a better transfer out there somewhere.
Yeah.
I think it was meant to be seen through a half-dead light bulb in a strip mall multiplex. And when you shine the cold digital light of HD on that, they're like, oh, these fuckers couldn't even draw. To Camila's point, you know, a sane person would have said, forgive the language, but I truly believe that Don Bluth, there's something deeply wrong, would have said, okay, we're hitting hard with killing this kid's mother on screen. We're going to ease up from there. The thing where he thinks her shadow is there.
Oh my God.
He sees her in the clouds. And then somehow the lowest blow, when they think Petrie got eaten saving them.
Yeah.
And Ducky says out loud, he was my friend. What is the matter with you? Robin, if this is to teach kids, fine. And then we just keep punching kids in the head. And by the way, her death was entirely Littlefoot's fault. You get up in the middle of the goddamn night just to go chase a frog into the bushes, and the prejudice aside, you were told don't play with that kid, and you're just going to hop. This is what happens.
Exactly, and that is the underlying meaning of this entire movie. That is the point of it. Kids, listen to your parents. Don't go running off nowhere when you're told, your punk ass is told to stay where you're supposed to be, because otherwise your mom's going to die. So it's like,
hear that, guys? It's like,
yeah. Exactly. That's tomorrow's lesson. So right after we work on lowercase b.
Please tell me you didn't watch this with her.
No, I started to.
Okay.
But then I started too late and it got close to her bedtime or whatever. And then by the time, you know, I take her upstairs and I go ahead to continue it. And it's like, oh, it's a good thing this, because that's when the death happened. It was
like, yeah.
What the fuck? Like, she wouldn't understand it, but still, it's just, it's too much.
So going back to this movie explains everything about me. My clear memory of seeing this in the theater was I went with my friend and my friend's mom. And during the mom death scene, I kind of looked over at my friend and saw her holding her mom's hand. And I thought, I don't think I would do that. I remember this so clearly. Just being like, yeah, if my mom were here, I think I would be willfully avoiding eye contact with her. Like, pretending she's not in the room. So, I guess what I'm saying is that you can't really prepare a child for the death of their parent.
No.
So maybe you shouldn't try. But I don't know. I mean, I am glad that we have this as generational trauma.
Well, I did it, but now I do.
Like Littlefoot's mom, and they'll be like, Littlefoot's fucking mom.
Mm-hmm.
I guess upon every generation, there is one. So I guess I am the generation of Bambi's mom, or even I didn't see it until I was grown.
I did see Bambi in the theater when it was re-released, I think, in 88. And I did see that one with my mom. And I remember her saying that she was like, when I was a little girl, I cried when Bambi's mom died.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, well, I didn't.
Passing down the best gift of all, depression.
Yeah.
Gift that keeps on giving.
It's funny because this is a part of my childhood. Like I said, there were scenes of it that I recognized. You know, I clearly, like, I remember the scene. Certainly haven't watched it since then. Down to sense memory of, like, you know, when Sarah showed up, I was like, oh, yeah, I had the little Burger King hand puppet of her. Like
Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut, that's right.
Yes. Those puppets were the best.
So, in some level, it's got to be foundational, you know, and it probably is like why I don't, has something to do with why I don't like happy movies nowadays. But other than a few, like, there's a few things I liked, I don't think this is good. Like, I didn't write down a score. I truly didn't know. But like, in sitting with it for a few days, I'm like, not only is it, you know, a film monster, nothing really happens and the script isn't great and the animation, like, the animation has a tone, but it's not really impressive. It's just not very good.
I think the animation reminds me most, and this wasn't an animated film that fucked me up, was The Hobbit. That's what the animation was like reminding me of, and I think that also had something to do with how much I was withdrawn from this viewing of this film.
I don't know what kind of score to give it. I think I am going to give it a higher score because it does what it intends to do, but I agree with you, Sean, that it's not actually all that good. And I think that having very recently watched All Dogs Go to Heaven, which is a more fucked up movie, mm-hmm. but also just clearly a better one.
I didn't see that either.
In every, like, the animation is better. There are songs that are pretty good. The voice acting is better. Yeah. So that weirdly, I am thinking like, well, you know, The Land Before Time isn't as good as All Dogs Go to Heaven, so it's not going to get a great score for me. That doesn't make any sense. But that's where we're at. I'm almost 40.
Just a rando, rando question. Just the death, not the entire movie, but the death scenes. Littlefoot, worse than Simba?
Ooh, good question.
Yes, because Simba was so much... I know that, who knows how old the lion was versus how old the dinosaur is. Simba seemed so much more of like a full... Simba seemed like about a 12-year-old, which right. is a terrible time to watch your father die. But like, he seems like he's at least vaguely prepared to confront that trauma, right. whereas Littlefoot feels like he's 8 days old and has right. no idea what's going on.
This is true, yeah.
That's a really good analysis to yeah. justify my gut reaction of I think Littlefoot is worse, but then I was like, it's probably because I saw Littlefoot when I was 4 right. and Simba when right. I was 10.
Right.
But the other thing I'll say is that, you know, we as a viewer know that Mufasa is dying because of like political machinations, right? Like,
right.
Right.
And with Land Before Time, it's like, well, it's a dangerous world out there and death comes for us all. You know? Yeah. It's like, you don't have time to grieve. There's an earthquake.
The webcomic XKCD, I forget what the context was, but it kind of posited the same question, but with this or the episode of Futurama where you have to realize that Fry's dog waited for him outside of the pizza shop every day for the rest of his life.
No.
Land Before Time or a pizza shop?
Yeah.
I'm not a dog person, so I abstain.
I'm going to go with Futurama. Yeah. That's tragic. That poor dog.
That's okay.
I'm glad y'all have that.
All right. If no, it's worse. If you've suppressed this, keep in mind, Fry finds his dog's fossilized body, and the whole episode is about developing this technology where Fry can resurrect his beloved dog, and we keep flashing back to the past, how much Fry loved his dog, and at the last minute, they figure out that Fry's dog lived to be 13 years old, and Fry got frozen when the dog was about 4. So Fry made the decision not to resurrect the dog because he had a whole life after Fry went away, and he wouldn't be the same dog that he remembered, and then, at the end of the episode, we cut back to that life, which was just the dog, day after day, waiting for Fry.
I'm gonna cry.
Until the moment the dog died. That's her? Worse than Littlefoot. What?
I said her.
Her?
What's so great about Fry?
Fry's the dude, right?
Colin just yeah. ripped off his headphones and he's going, Bumbo!
Yeah, I never watched Futurama, but yeah, that is heartbreaking.
By the way, the letterbox list for this week is called Cry Baby Cry. There was a Twitter poll which received over 7,000 responses. The question was, the hardest you've ever cried during a movie was? And only the top 10 are ranked. Land Before Time obviously is on the list, but was not in the top 10.
Hmm.
Number one was Coco. All right. I can see it. Inside Out was number 2. Grave of the Fireflies was number 3. I don't have context for that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's about nuclear war.
Okay.
Yes, like it's actually sad.
Dear Zachary, a letter to a son about his father. Iron Giant, Schindler's List, My Girl, you know.
I think the hardest, but, the two times I've cried the hardest at a film were Imitation of Life, which I cry every fucking time I watch it. Even all I need to do is watch the last 10 minutes and I'm just like in tears. And Requiem for a Dream, I cried for 2 hours after that movie for probably some different reasons than intended, but
that's a bleak movie.
Mine's on the list. It was Big Fish. I mean, I probably wouldn't today. That's definitely one you cry to when you're about 19, but I was sobbing at the end of Big Fish.
I think you can cry to that at any age if you have daddy issues.
Yeah, probably.
I cry at movies all the time. But notable movie crying memories. I fucking lost it when I was watching Running on Empty. Have you ever seen that? Great movie. River Phoenix got an Oscar nomination for it. But I watched that right before I was leaving for college. And like, it's about family separation. And wow. I was like, oh, no. And I cried so hard watching The Descendants that a stranger handed me a tissue in the movie theater.
Aw.
That's nice. The George Clooney movie?
Yeah. Dead Mom
what
stuff.
What happened? Okay. All right.
There it is. Okay.
I remember the look of it.
Yeah.
Right. It was good. It was a good movie. I mean, the main thing I remember, like, I loved that movie. I wanted George Clooney to win that Oscar, but, like, I don't remember. I remember, like, a couple of moments from it. But, like, that movie, when it comes up, all I think about is Jim Rash making fun of Angelina Jolie to her face at the Oscars.
Right, right. And the trailer. Now, when Robin cuts this in, I want you to listen to the score and the little bit of the Diana Ross song and agree with me that it's also devastating. I don't know what key it's in. I heard there was a secret chord and it makes me cry, and that's the entire sound of this movie. Here's some of the trailer.
This holiday season, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg present a Don Bluth film, The Land Before Time. Long ago, when the Earth was new, five friends, lost and alone,
Mother, where are you?
Took an incredible journey. From the creators of An American Tale comes a story of friendship.
Do not stop! We must stay together!
Courage.
Oh, you can't quit now. What if the Great Valley is just over the top of these rocks?
And laughter. From Universal Pictures.
Some things you see with your eyes, others you see with your heart.
A new adventure is born. The Land Before Time.
Yeah, the trailer was depressing and not much happened, so it's perfect.
I the thing in the trailer where I'm like, the trailer is worse than the movie, is the point where it's like, and laughs.
And it just shows Sarah laughing. It doesn't show something funny. See, laughs. There's one.
I think there's like a goofy sound effect. And it's like, ah. Yeah, this sounds a little desperate, trailer.
It's 1/30th the length of the film. Let's rate it and then put it back in the secret cabinet of dark thoughts that haunts our dreams. I don't know, 40. Clearly there's something to it because I'm 37 and troubled by it. It's like they did something. It just isn't very good. 40. I usually ask one of you. Robin.
Sure. I'm going to say 65.
Okay.
Again, it's like this movie was successful in its mission.
Destruction. That great success. Camila.
So I guess because it was so successful in its mission, or whatever its chosen mission was, I give it a 29. This is too fucking sad and traumatic. I just couldn't take it.
Is that the same score as last week? Are we saying that Look Who's Talking and The Land Before Time are equivalent films? No, this is 1/3 better. It gets a 44 and 2/3.
Wow.
There you go. Yeah, hey, I feel like no one's going to be like, that is the best movie ever. Everyone's going to be like, yeah, man, yeah. We don't need to spend much time on the bingo card. I don't think anyone kissed in the rain or dressed in drag in Land Before Time.
Nope.
The movie was a drag, but it's that's not what I had intended.
The only thing I could conceivably, there was some volcanic activity. Did someone not look at those explosions? But
no, they looked, because she said you have to walk past the mountains that burn.
Not in the spirit of the thing.
Yeah, I don't
anyway.
Feel good about that.
Well, nothing on the bingo card next week, but the tomorrow's another day. Camila, tell me that you watched something other than this.
I watched Scream.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth.
I watched
Scream.
I went to the movie theater and everything.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I reached a breaking point in my life, and I was going to, it was either that or just scream into a pillow, just because that's where I was mentally that day. So I decided to go ahead and spend 2 hours in a semi-crowded theater in the dark with strangers. Which kind of...
How was that experience, like, emotionally?
Freaked me fuck out, because when I bought my ticket online, there were only, like, four other people, and I had chose a seat at the way back against the wall in the middle of an empty row. I get there, and motherfuckers are just, like, piling in, and, like, people are just, like, coming in and surrounding me, and to the point of where I had to get up and, like, go move to, like... the far, you know, one of those twosy seats on the left, like the second row, which it was an uncomfortable, like rhombus shaped, like viewing experience. But still, I was able to relax a pinch more.
Yeah.
But well, like, still good for you for coming back.
Yes. So aside from that, and I'm going to have to probably give it a second viewing just because of there were still a lot of outside forces that were just distracting to me. But I mean, I enjoyed it. There were moments, it didn't feel like a Scream movie to me per se, and I'm sure it's because, you know, Wes is dead, and I don't think Kevin Williamson, did he write the script?
No, he got a producer credit, but that was it.
Yeah, so I don't know, there were a lot of things I didn't like, there were a couple things I did like. All in all, like, I will not, you know, banish it to the to an outer island like I do Scream 4. So it exists for me. But yeah, that, and I've been like, and I got like a free subscription to Apple TV Plus for 4 months. So I've been watching a bunch of shit on there, mostly Ted Lasso, which everybody in the world is telling me was amazing. And I refused to pay like the subscription fee. And I had I known about Brett Goldstein, is that his name?
Brett Goldstein, nice Jewish boy.
My God. Hello, sir.
Right? I just want to quickly interject. It is 2:22 on February 22nd, 2022.
Wow. All right.
So, but yeah, seriously, I hate how much I love Roy Kent. He's just, he doesn't deserve to be so charming.
It's stupid how charming he is. So we've been watching a bunch of that, and The Morning Show, which I'm like really into right now also.
Yeah, I zoned out with the nice, pleasant television shows. Now the horror movie. Yeah, when I watched it, it got better when I saw it a second time, because then I knew what I was expecting from it.
Right.
You know, in terms of which characters would get the focus and which, you know, I could kind of sit with it a little bit more the second time. I still don't want to spoil it because there's a lot of people who are going to wait for cable on that one. I want to see if you agree. The motive.
Uh-huh.
It's not. I don't have a problem with that being the motive. That's an interesting subject. They just didn't set that up.
Right.
You know,
that's how I felt too. And that was one of my problems with it too. I was like, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't. And also just like the one who was Ghostface, I was like, I'm not feeling this person, this character, this actor. I don't know.
We'll talk about it. We'll spoil it off mic.
Yes. I think that's another problem, Robin. Too. I'm sorry. Just like another one of my problems, is like this generational gap where it is now. Because, you know, Scream started in the 90s. And so now, like, we've got a clear, like, grown-ass adults with these teenagers that I don't give a shit about. You know? Like, so that's kind of where I am, too, because it just feels, I don't know, it's like this divide that's not, they don't seem like, it doesn't feel like it should be in the same movie, but.
Right. I haven't seen the film, but based like the trailer feeling that I got was like, just pick. Are you going to be a movie about Sydney or are you going to have babies? Right. Choose one.
Right. And I'm done.
And well, also, they already did New Babies with Scream 4.
Right.
So
people just didn't like it. We'll see. I mean, I'd imagine that this is so that the next one has a lot of these characters and Sydney's in it for 5 minutes. You know, that seems to be what they would want. We'll see what happens.
Well, yeah, I would also like to make it a little bit more difficult to find her. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, if I were Sydney Prescott, I would not be Sydney Prescott.
Right.
especially not 2-hour fucking flight away from where tragedy struck.
She's still in California.
That's what I'm saying.
She just moved like the Bay Area or something. Like, we got 50 states.
What are you doing?
Robin, what you watching?
Well, I have been also back at the movie theater trying to win the... I'm not going to win the Oscars death race this year, but I am in the race. Let's put it that way. And I have been reminded of how hard it is to see movies like Parallel Mothers and The Worst Person in the World and then have no one on earth to talk to about them.
I've been slacking. I'm sorry.
And I will come home and I'll be like, Colin, let me explain this crazy baby swap movie that I watch, you know, and it's something. No, in particular, The Worst Person in the World is one of those movies what I want to have like a 4-hour long conversation about, which does not mean I think it is good. Yeah. I think it is very obnoxious. That is a movie that insists upon itself, but it definitely gave me a lot to talk about. And I think that some people will love it. So I'm kind of recommending a bad movie here.
Interesting.
Parallel Mothers, if you like Almodovar, you're going to like it. And if you don't, you won't. Nightmare Alley was boring. Coda made me cry. Yeah, that's sort of the current state of Robin's Oscar's death race. I also watched of Inventing Anna.
How was that?
It was nice to see a lot of Scandal actors again. It's like, oh, my buddies from early quarantine days.
Nice.
Do you like Coda or do you just cry?
Yes, I did like it a lot. I mean, to me, that is more like an emotional button. Like, that's like, observe this film to cry. Yes. Right? Like, it's like, that's going to end up on that letterbox list if they run a poll again. Oh,
yeah. Robin said to me beforehand, I was like, I'm pretty sure Coda's going to make me cry. I said, Coda made me cry. You're fucked. Yeah. Like, you have no hope.
I was crying for like the entire last hour of it. Just crying, just weeping.
Damn.
Yeah.
Camila, you can get in on that. That's an Apple TV Plus project. And it is very good.
It's not sad crying. Wistful, right? It's, okay. You know.
Like, there were a couple episodes of Ted Lasso that I started tearing up on. Like, what is happening?
I had to skip a couple episodes of Ted Lasso.
Am I just emotional? They were
too emotional. But yeah, Coda is a tear factory.
I should have seen more of these, but more and more at the end of the day, I'm going to Paramount or Peacock and being like, let me find a Western from 1945 that no one has actually watched. And like, that's what I want to do with that, like, unwindy movie time. But yeah, I'm going to catch up to some of these. Right now, the news is bad. I mean, Uncharted, like, I crawled my way to give it a 5 out of 10. And then it made a lot of money. It's on our list now. It's the number one movie in America. And I put on Twitter yesterday, like, who saw this and why? I don't know anyone in the world who cared, but a lot of people went to see it. It's just that National Treasure Indiana Jones. It looks like an adventure. Maybe this one will work. Nope.
I'll watch it on an airplane at some point.
Mark Wahlberg and Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah. It's which I am sorry, Tommy. You're never gonna look like a grown-up. Like, I know they say you're 25 and you have a suit and you have, you know, a haircut. You're 14. Right. All right. Forever.
He's just a little puddum. Who's a puddum?
Yeah.
He should get, he just needs to be slightly less boyishly handsome so that he can go into whatever Daniel Radcliffe is doing right now.
He just needs hit puberty. I don't know what's going on with it.
Like, it's not going to happen. It's not coming.
And I imagine that he can't grow facial hair, or at least not like, I feel like he has like he can't have connectors like with a beard.
Hey, remember a few months ago when we talked about Texas Chainsaw 3D and I said, there's another Texas Chainsaw movie completed and sitting on the shelf. Apparently it was supposed to be really bad and had bad test screenings and maybe it'll never even come out. All of that was true, except Netflix eventually said, fuck it, here it is.
I think somebody at Netflix probably listened to that podcast and they're like, ha, challenge accepted.
Or they were like, oh fuck, that's right, we do have another Texas Chainsaw.
We bought that shit. All right, fine, dump it in February. For the horror people that are like, I love when a movie has good kills. There you go. Got the good kills, got a couple great shots. At one point, Leatherface stands up in a field of dead sunflowers. And that 1 second, I was like, duh, cinema. it's the stupidest. Other than that, it's just a stupid. These fucking hipster kids buy a whole Texas ghost town. because they're going to move other hipsters there and open brunch places as like a little hipster separatist community.
This one, that's I think I might want to watch this one.
Is at least a premise, right? The one that we watched was like, we have to drive somewhere.
Right. No, but this one,
inherited a house. That's closer, right. Straighter line.
It's like this one, I'm rooting for Leatherface.
Yeah.
Eventually, he does take the chainsaw onto a crowded party bus full of douchebags. And that, yes, great. No, it was dumb and bad. And clearly, this is an imitation of Halloween 2018. And they're like, we're going to bring the final girl back. And then, well into planning, someone pointed out that that actress is dead and has been for some time. So they just got a woman that doesn't even look like Marilyn Burns, a woman that looks like Jamie Lee Curtis now. Wow. And there she is, the survivor. And you're like, it's just some lady you found.
Oh,
wow.
I'm embarrassed.
I thought Death on the Nile was okay. It wasn't bad. It's definitely slow because it wants to be. You're curling up with a book. So
yeah.
Go in knowing that you won't get to the titular Death on the Nile for an hour. take a cup of coffee and, a well-shot mystery will unfold. That's
what I get. Biscuits.
Yeah, great. And I rewatched the 1996 Romeo plus Juliet, and such a time capsule, and yet so fun. It's fun.
I love that movie.
It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
It was at Row House for Shakespeare Adaptations Week.
Oh, fun.
Did they do any of the lowly teen comedies?
No, it was Tragedy of Macbeth, Romeo plus Juliet, Throne of Blood, and Shakespeare in Love, which does not actually fit the theme.
I mean, it's sort of Twelfth Night, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, throw in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Right.
Does the world not need Heath Ledger singing You're Just Too Good to Be True often as possible?
My sister did a paper when she was in college. She took a film class and she did a paper about all the lowly teen comedy classic literature adaptations. And I watched a bunch of them with her and it ruled.
If you were really into that, you would have really expected more from Julia Stiles' career.
I really did, is the thing. I think we all did.
She was in, Dexter? Which one was it? Was it Gone Girl?
Maybe Hustlers? She was in Gone Girl. I don't know.
Hustlers. I'm thinking of Hustlers.
Yeah.
How did I get from Hustlers to Gone Girl?
She
anyway.
Was in Hustlers?
Two movies that are amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, she's the journalist in Hustlers. I think that was top of mind because I just watched Inventing Anna, another. Why is the journalist involved so much?
Let's draw a movie. To make our intentions clear, we are cheering for Jurassic Park. We think it would be very nice, but the number is 250. That seems long before J. Yeah. In fact, it's B. It's B for Black Hawk Down.
Huh.
That Josh Hartnett?
Yes, and baby Tom Hardy.
All right. Yeah. Yes. Finally. We'll get a little Hardy in here.
Tiny, tiny baby Tom Hardy.
I don't know what happened, but Camila's Tom Hardy noise made Peanut start barking.
I know what happened.
Definitely never seen it. Was this like a bomb or
I think it was a moderate hit. Are you maybe thinking because it didn't get a Best Picture nomination, but it did get a Best Director nomination? Or is that not how your brain automatically works the way that mine does?
No, you know what? I'm confusing it with Pearl Harbor. I'm mixing it with Pearl Harbor, which definitely was a bomb. I didn't know this was Ridley Scott. We keep covering Ridley Scott, don't we?
Listen, he likes to work.
Yeah.
All right.
Josh Hartnett, Ewan McGregor, Eric Bana, Tom Sizemore, William Fichtner, Sam Shepard, Jeremy Piven, and Tom Hardy in his first film role. Not so much any human women, but hey, it's
not a
one.
What's funny is I think Robin and I both, when you mentioned Jeremy Piven, we were both like, what?
We did. That was for Jeremy Piven.
One of these things is not like the others.
It's probably long, isn't it? I probably need to block some time. 144. Yeah. Well, look, if you average that and Land Before Time, you get a normal movie. So.
Right.
Yeah. Before we get there, Land Before Time was the number one movie in America, November 18th, 1988. What was the number one song in America? If you were paying attention, you will note that we have already covered this song. This is not the first time this has been an answer.
It was during Child's Play, whatever that was.
Well, it was. We've done three in a row now, but actually Scrooged. Scrooged was the next week, which we covered. So
I remember one time I guessed Wild Wild West by the Escape Club, and Sean was like, "There's no way you knew that." And I was like, "I heard it on the radio on the way here. Is it that again?"
No, I think that was the Child's Play one. Okay. And this is right around there, but it's not that. No.
The Phil Collins? Oh wait.
No, he wit.
Bobby McFerrin.
No. Phil Collins wishes he had this guy's hair in 1988.
Billy Ocean? Robert Palmer.
Even more hair.
Bon Jovi?
Correct.
Living on a Prayer?
No, this is kind of on the back half of the greatest hits, I would say.
Bad Medicine is earlier than that.
Something about a rose?
It's Bad Medicine.
Oh, it's Bad Medicine? Yeah, that's
Bad
definitely.
Medicine.
Yep, would have never guessed it.
Is Bon Jovi good? Or
yes, I'm from New Jersey. I must abstain.
I have a tiny story. I've been Bon Jovi adjacent. And when I used to work at MCG Jazz, apparently, I guess he was in town to, I don't know, concert or something. But he, you know, they toured him through the facility, blah, blah, blah. Now, if you're familiar with Manchester Craftsman's Guild, you know they have, like, art classes and things. And they also have, like, ceramics classes and all that jazz. So the next day, I was not there for Mr. Bon Jovi's tour. But you could see his tiny footprints walking from the ceramics room to the backstage of the jazz area. Because he attract tiny dust prints.
We put a frame around one. And this is how the Grauman's Chinese Theater thing started. A bunch of celebrities just showed up early and said, "Ah, we might as well make it a thing."